Hello, and welcome to Routines and Ruts, the podcast about daily rhythms and the inevitable stumbles we encounter in our lives. I'm your host, Madeline Dorr, and for more than half a decade, I've been asking people what their days look like, and have recently bundled all of these insights into my very first book called I Didn't Do the Thing Today. The book will be out next week if you're in Australia, which means there's just one more week left to pre-order and receive a free gentle manifesto for the days that you didn't do the thing. There is a link in the show notes for you to pre-order, or you can head to madelinedorr.com. For now, I'll be answering your productivity guilt and existential quandaries, so I'll also pop a link in the show notes to where you can submit a question of your own, or again, visit madelinedorr.com/ask. A quick note to say that I am not a licensed therapist, but rather drawing on my own stumbles and the lessons I've learnt in my days and from my conversations. So in many ways, I'm sharing the advice that I would really like to hear. And so my hope is to inspire you to use these episodes as a springboard to find your own answers for your stumbles as well. Before I dive into this week's question, I will share my routine and my rut of the week. My routine of the week is about keeping a spiral diary. Releasing a book out into the world is both exciting and daunting. I think if those two things were a Venn diagram, there would be a lot of overlap. For the last couple of weeks, it's been a bit of a pendulum swing between the excitement and the feelings of nerves and worry and just general daunting what ifs. And so there have been a few spirals, which is interesting because the book is all about productivity guilt spirals. And this is a different variety of spirals. But something that I found that's been really helpful is to actually keep a new diary dedicated to my book related spirals and those swings from the excitement to the daunted feeling. And it's been an incredible way to really self-resource. So any little stumbles that are popping up or disappointments or imperfections that are inevitable in not just the book launch process, but any project, any experience, any relationship, any living, there's always going to be these niggles. And so having a place to put those in writing and to untangle and to speak to myself about the spiral has been a great way to start to untangle from them. So I can highly recommend a spiral diary for whatever spirals you might be getting all tangled up in. My rut of the week is somewhat related, and the rut is about worry. And so much of the daunted feeling that I'm getting is really about future worry and what if this goes wrong, or what if this doesn't meet my expectations, or what if there's criticism? All of these what ifs, all of these things that are very much outside of my control and very much future projecting. And in doing that, I actually take myself out of the excitement. And so it was quite timely to stumble across a quote by Ernest Hemingway, who said, "Worry a little bit every day, and in a lifetime you will lose a couple of years. If something is wrong, fix it if you can, but train yourself not to worry. Worry never fixes anything." That got me thinking. If something is wrong, fix it if you can. If that something is outside of your control or confusing or undefined or uncertain, then maybe there's nothing you can do to fix it, or there's nothing you can do to fix it right now. If that's so, I think the best advice is to simply wait and see what happens. And in many ways, maybe it's a really helpful approach as we enter the new year. We've all had quite a time for varying reasons and in varying ways for the last year, couple of years, maybe even decade. And we can pin a lot of hope to a new year, as well as maybe a lot of worry. And so perhaps this idea of just waiting and seeing is the best we can aim for. And maybe it's what we're always doing. We're always waiting and seeing. And instead of maybe being passive in that experience, we can be curious. So that's been my lesson of the week, is to let go of the worry. If there's nothing you can do right now to fix something, then wait and see and embrace that space of waiting. Now onto this week's question. As you can imagine, I received many questions over the last couple of weeks centered around making resolutions, sticking to new habits, and so I've bundled them all together into, I guess, a mega question because they're all in there. So, dear Madeline, how do I make resolutions that I can actually keep? Dear Madeline, I've been thinking about the breaking of bad habits, especially the ones that make me feel good but aren't good for me. Dear Madeline, what approach do you take to resolutions? Dear Madeline, should I make any resolutions? Dear Madeline, I know making New Year's resolutions can be setting ourselves up to fail with high expectations, but I know I respond well to the clean slate of the new year, so I want to capitalize on that. Dear Madeline, how do you build good habits and let go of bad ones? So, with this bevy of questions about making and sticking to resolutions, I wanted to see what resolution actually meant. My trusted dictionary says that it's a firm decision to do or not to do something. So a resolution is a decision. And in every decision, there's a promise of change. But as many of us have encountered when we're making resolutions for the new year in particular, there's a very high chance we keep doing something we don't want to do or not do something that we want to do, and we break that promise. And it's often in the breaking of a promise, the shattering of the hope of change, that we end up berating ourselves. Not only do we keep doing the thing that we don't want to be doing, or we don't do the thing that we want to be doing, but we add a layer of guilt and shame for not somehow transforming overnight into the person who does the thing or doesn't do the thing. And this makes me wonder, instead of all of these promises of change and this constant resolution making, what if instead we asked, what if nothing changes? What if this year we do keep sleeping in? What if this year we do keep drinking too much? What if this year we keep up that habit of revenge bedtime and keep postponing sleep? What if we didn't try to change? And I don't mean to sound defeatist, but I think in asking what if nothing changes, it can actually be quite empowering and freeing. In making these resolutions and these promises, we're trying to change into a better version of ourselves, or what we think is a better version of ourselves, to find happiness, find more fulfillment, or make more money, or look better. But ironically, it's often in the moments that we accept ourselves, when we stop trying to change ourselves or the people that we love or the things that we do or the feelings that we're feeling, that we find what we're looking for, because you find more ease within yourself. There's this point that Louise Hay makes, which is you've been criticizing yourself for years and it hasn't worked. Try accepting yourself and see what happens. And maybe the same can be said for changing. You've been trying to change yourself for years and it hasn't worked. So what about accepting yourself and seeing what happens from there? And I think it's freeing because in asking what if nothing changes, you then have to really survey what you have and figure out how you're going to find contentment with that. If nothing changes, can I still find something in my days, some vitality, without this thing, without doing this thing or without not doing this thing? Can I still find some vitality in my days if I never change? If that person doesn't change? If the circumstances don't change? Can I still find something to enjoy about my life? Something to savor? Can I still find a way to work with that? I think it's incredibly empowering because instead of postponing our contentment until we've changed, we can find contentment now. And interestingly, we change from this very decision to stop trying to change. As the philosopher Kierkegaard said, face the facts of being who you are, for that is what changes what you are. So what if we didn't try to change this year? What if we didn't make those decisions to do or not to do something? And what if we just face the facts of who we are and ask if we can be content within that? Maybe that's all the resolution that we need. So to shift slightly to this idea of habits that came up in a few different questions, the other thing I've come to see, having shed so-called bad habits and picked up good ones and shed good ones and picked up bad ones many times over in my life, the periods of change or the periods where I'm able to do that don't come from making these promises. They don't come from resolution. Those periods come from action. And the action is preceded by something often outside of my control. So an undetectable shift sometimes, a nudge, a prod to do something different, an itchiness, an inertia, and somehow I find myself running again. Somehow I find myself resting when I need to rest, going to bed early. Somehow I find myself in this momentum of good habits. And as I've spoken about before, there can be this sort of domino effect of finding your first domino, and then it has this knock-on effect. And I think that good habits can compound like that, and they can kind of eliminate the bad ones. But it's not from necessarily deciding to or forcing myself to. It's from listening to something within me that's telling me to do something. There's almost like a pull to it that I don't have as much control over as you'd think when you're writing a list of New Year's resolutions. Interestingly, I think that the times that I've changed the most have been preceded by this undetectable shift or something quite explicit. So a heartbreak, a rut, a rock bottom, an external or internal experience that has really shaken me, shaken my days. And it's been the catalyst to pick up good habits or to drop not so good ones. And that's been the thing that can steady me. So it's interesting, I speak about in my book that there's this cycle between a routine. And after a while, a routine can become so monotonous that we actually find ourselves stuck in a rut. And when we're stuck in that rut, we need that nudge, something that can get us back into a rhythm again. And that nudge can come from these big life events like a heartbreak or a grief or a loss, or it can just sometimes come to us on an idle Tuesday afternoon. But the point is that we don't wish for painful circumstances, but often they're the thing that can be the impetus to do things differently. And they can be that nudge. And that can happen at any time. And it's often not coinciding with January 1st. It's about listening to our days, being in them, noticing when we're called to do something differently, or maybe when we're nudged to do something differently. And I think what is also different is that there's a certain patience and slowness to this kind of change. It's so in contrast to the kind of promise of change that we see around this time of year, where suddenly at 12:01, we are going to change and we have made the decision to do and not to do certain things. This kind of change, I've observed, it's taking things one day at a time and slowly finding ourselves, retooling ourselves, rather than on this particular day, at this particular time, I am changed. And this isn't to say that that doesn't happen, that people aren't capable of sticking to resolutions. I've seen people give up drinking at 12:01 on January 1st and go the whole year through. I've seen people start training for a marathon even with a New Year's Day hangover. I've seen people pick up a vegan diet and stick to it. I've seen people start volunteering. I've seen people stop doing the things that they don't want to do and start doing the things that they want to do. It's very possible, but it's back to this idea that we berate ourselves when we're not immediately changed in the new year. People do change, but I think what's important to note is that we're changing all the time and we can change at any point. Change is in the action, not the promise. At any point, we can start to learn the piano. At any point, we can start running. At any point, we can get up earlier. At any point, we can stop overthinking. At any point, we can do the things we want to do. It doesn't have to be January 1st. We're always changing, and so much so that we don't even know what the changed version of ourselves will want to do and not to do in a few months' time, yet we're making resolutions and goals and promises for that person that might not actually suit that person or that future version of ourselves. Yet we go on making resolutions, we go on breaking promises, we go on blaming ourselves for not changing overnight, when we could instead focus on what helps us take that action. And what we need for that action is not a promise, but rather energy. Because energy expands, and energy can come to us even when we are in that moment of heartbreak or at that rock bottom or that idle Tuesday afternoon. That can be what propels us towards change. And so rather than a list of promises to change ourselves, why not this year look for ways to expand yourself, to let that energy expand you and change you? If that sounds appealing, I've just compiled a couple of ways I think that we can do that. So, the first is to decipher between shoulds and wants. Shoulds can be the things that we move on our to-do list to tomorrow again and again and again. Shoulds can be the things that we think other people want us to do or have told us that we need to do. Shoulds are the things that society tells us to put on our New Year's resolutions. Shoulds feel hollow. Shoulds are very hard to find energy for. They feel limp. A want, however, is alive with energy. It's where the energy naturally wants to go. It's like I mentioned last week, when we enjoy doing something, when we want to do something, we will. And there's no doubt going to be pesky things like fear and self-doubt that can get in the way of even the things that we want to do or the things where the energy is. But for the moment, go to where the energy is. Where's the excitement? Where's the enjoyment? I read the other day that habits can be formed really quickly in just a few days as long as people have a strong positive emotion connected to that behavior or that habit. And so again, that positive emotion can be joy, can be enjoyment, can be enthusiasm, excitement. And so, again, we can change at any point, especially when we want to do the thing. And maybe it is as simple as that, in that we should be gravitating to the things we want to do rather than holding on to all of these shoulds and postponing them again and again, only to feel overwhelmed and exhausted and burnt out by them. I think these shoulds are what can keep many of us on the busyness hamster wheel, when the wants are the very things that kind of propel us, and then it doesn't feel like we're busy and burnt out because we're doing the things that we want to do and we want to do them. And so there's no secret here other than inspecting the emotion, the drive behind something, and maybe it's as simple as wanting to do it. So that's number one. Number two, it can be really powerful to let go and create space. I had the lovely opportunity last week to be on one of my favorite podcasts, First Time Podcast, and I was speaking with the wonderful Kate Mildenhall, who asked me what I want to let go of and what I want to let in. And I thought that was so beautiful in a phrasing of resolutions. And also ties so beautifully into this idea of getting closer to the energy. So letting go of the things that you don't want to do, letting go of the shoulds, then create space for the very things that you want to be able to let in and the things that have the energy. And this very letting go, this shedding, it becomes quite powerful in that it gains its own momentum. I remember this quote from the writer Anne Lamott, who said that we take so much stuff around that keeps us flying low when really we want to soar. So we start throwing out more and more. And I thought that was quite beautiful because we do, back to these shoulds, take on so much stuff, carry it around, and it's heavy and it keeps us flying low. But once we start letting go of one thing, we see that that's actually possible and we can do it and we can let go of more and more and more and therefore let in more and more. Or just keep soaring. The third idea about getting closer to the energy is to go deeper, not wider. So maybe if we can't let go of certain things, obligations, responsibilities, maybe we can experiment instead with not adding more to the list. And so don't add new things. Instead, go deeper with the things that you're already doing. This was a brilliant concept, I thought, from the writer and entrepreneur David Kane. And he wrote, "What if, for a whole year, you stopped acquiring new things or taking on new pursuits? Instead, you returned to abandoned projects, stalled hobbies, unread books, and other neglected intentions, and go deeper with them than you have ever before." I love that idea. It goes back to this idea of, instead of changing who we are, we can expand who we are. The fourth idea is to be patient. So if you're not sure what you want or need to do, try not doing anything. Instead, just rock gently with the uncertainty of it all, the wait and see of it all, and see what energy comes to you, what things bubble up, what calls your attention, what wants somehow arrive to you. I think that we can afford to be patient because we don't actually want to get everything we want in this life. We don't want to achieve every goal. We don't want to know the outcome of every decision, because happiness actually isn't about getting everything we want. We don't wind up with fulfillment from having all of our desires realized. We wind up finding fulfillment with the pursuit, with the taking of the action, with the being present in the process of the change, and being patient with it all, noticing it all, directing yourself towards where the energy is. The fifth and final idea is to hold intentions lightly. So instead of writing down an overcrowded list of unrealistic resolutions and promises, we can hold intentions lightly. And this relieves some of the pressure, because expectations fixate on how a goal should look, say to cook the perfect meal, whereas intentions emphasize the experience around that goal, for example, enjoying the meal with the people that you love. And so one great example, I think, of going with intentions over expectations is to pick just one word as a gentle guide for our days in the year ahead. And I've written about this before, and previous words have been joy, momentum, and trust. Holding a word can be an anchor during times of uncertainty, and it also invites us to be more curious about how the year unfolds, to wait and see how lessons about joy or lessons about trust come to us over the year ahead, and to take note of that rather than having a set idea of how things will unfold. I think importantly, instead of berating ourselves when things unfold differently to how we expect, we can allow ourselves to be surprised by how our intentions are met. So in summary, ask yourself, what if nothing changes? Can you still find something to enjoy in your days? Remember, we are constantly changing, and it's not the promise of change that propels us, but rather the action and the energy behind that action. To focus on expanding rather than changing, you can decipher between your shoulds and wants. You can make a let go and let in list. You can decide not to add any more to the list and go deeper rather than wider. You can be patient, and you can hold intentions lightly. So I hope you remember to expand your life rather than fixate on changing it this year. And I hope that whatever you encounter, you allow yourself to be who you are, because that is what can change who you are. Or maybe more accurately, expand the wonderful you that you already are. Thank you for listening to this episode of Routines and Ruts. And if you'd like more of my thoughts on navigating the stumbles of productivity guilt and what it means to be a fallible human, please do pre-order my book. The chapters delve further into debunking our notions of expectations and routine and discipline. And so there's lots for you to dive into. Plus, if you pre-order, you will get that beautiful gentle manifesto that I mentioned. So you'll find a link in the show notes, both to the pre-order links, but also to submit a question of your very own for an upcoming episode. Or you can head to madelinedoor.com to find all of those links as well. Talk soon. Until then, I want to leave you with a fitting poem to remind us that each day is a new day, not just January 1st. From the wonderful Susan College, called New Every Morning. Every day is a fresh beginning. Listen, my soul, to the glad refrain. And spite of old sorrows and older sinning, troubles forecasted and possible pain, take heart with the day and begin again.